I love that that's now just a thing that we can expect an energetic dance to go along with the hard hitting music that I really need to update. That, oh, Jason's here. Hey, Jason Carter, how's it going?
Hey, hey, don't know. Sean, do not update that music. It's very, it's good. It's hard hitting.
The music's not gonna be updated, but the intro was supposed to change over time to keep pace with the news. I haven't updated that since before the pandemic, but I will. Well, anyway, very glad to have you here. You're new and updated.
Yes, I am new and updated. I have a brand new computer just for you, Adarola.
Great. Well, I'm very excited about that. So thank you for joining us. Always glad to have you on. I know you've been doing big things recently. I decided not to mention before the show, decided to mention now, but so you have a lot of awesome guests on your show. And I always find out about it when you post on Instagram. But you posted that you were gonna have Maya on your show, and I almost died.
Why? Well, you're a fan, right?
Biggest crush on her when I was growing up. Oh my God, she was amazing.
John, you're not the first person to say that. I'm at least 12 people slid into my DMs were like, bro, Maya, oh my God. Same, had the biggest crush on her in high school. She's incredible. She's an awesome, awesome, awesome artist, awesome woman, vegan, very into good energy. Vegan. Yeah, she's like staunchly vegan, as a matter of fact. But head on over to my YouTube channel and check the video out. It's up now. But yeah, it was a great interview. Awesome. I'm gonna have you on, John. John, you're gonna be on in season 4. Don't worry, we're gonna get you on. It's gonna be great. It'll be awesome.
And when I appear, you're gonna get a DM from Maya that says, oh my God, I used to have the biggest crush on him back when he did Think Tank.
Probably
not.
Probably. No, probably no. John, listen, you have fans, trust and believe. You should start an OnlyFans account, John. I bet you would get all
that's
kinds
true.
Of tips.
And because I don't know exactly what that site is, but I do only care about my fans. So I should probably set one of those up.
Fair enough.
No matter what it takes.
Right,
like
right.
Brad Parscale, well, I will give my fans every inch. Did you see that interview? If out of context, it doesn't make any sense. But anyway, okay, so that's the intro to the show. Welcome everyone. Thank you for joining us on this daily political news show. Glad to have you here, whether you're watching on, you know, the members app or on Twitch or on YouTube or on whatever. Thank you for being here. Feel free to like the stream, share the stream so the more people know that we're talking as we go through these incredible stories. And if you send us in messages, comments, tweets, super chats, all that, we'll respond as we go. That said, Jason, why don't we launch into this thing?
Let's all systems go.
Okay. The state level challenges to the election continue with Rudy Giuliani being the chosen defender of Donald Trump, but he's not coming alone. He's got tons of amazing star witnesses testifying about the out of control electoral fraud that they've seen. They've come with not evidence necessarily, but I think boxed wine, as you'll see in this first clip of star witness that they had been hyping for some time, Melissa Carone. Here's what she had to slur.
The poll book is completely off. Completely off.
Off by 30,000?
I'd say that poll book is off by over 100,000. That poll book, why don't you look at the registered voters on there? How many registered voters are on there? Do you even know the answer to that?
No, I guess I'm trying to get to the bottom of this here.
Zero. There's zero.
So my question then is if the
what about the turnout rate? 120%?
Look, there's more and you can go look it up online. You've probably already seen it. I'm not gonna make you suffer through anymore, but she is like was involved with IT supposedly. In advance of that hearing, a Wayne County judge ruled that her allegations simply are not credible. I would argue based on what we saw that that judge knew what he or she was talking about. Jason, right. What'd you think?
I thought that she was the queen of the Karens. They unleashed that Kraken. No, whatever wine she was drinking is probably like some Chablis from France. You know, the box wine, the one you would see on the Jerry Springer episodes. She had imbibed a crap load of that. Like you said, these tweets, all of them. I implore everyone to go and just look at the S show that this was, because they are serious about what they're there to talk about. However, as it was found out that they're baseless and the claims they're making have no foundation, it's just great television. I chalk that up to great television. And there's more. My favorite one was the one who said, "Well, look, I'll let you guys play it, but like
we
I
do
said,
have
you
more, can, yeah,
yeah." Look, Shall we?
shall we? Really fast. Do you want to say on Twitch, by the way, because I always watch during the show. Thank you to Darkhawk for gifting those subs, but also to the individual that said she sounds like what Sarah Silverman sounds like when she's making fun of other women, which is right. Totally true. And I just want to say, you know, these are dark times. There are only a few good things to look forward to. I look forward to, I'm going to say, Chloe Fineman playing that woman on SNL this
100%.
Weekend.
Also, John, she also sounds like Kennedy, who is a now conservative reporter for Fox News. In her MTV days, before she figured out that she was into politics, like coming up is Fiona Apple's criminal on MTV. You know, remember the 90s MTV
a little angst bit.
And modeling angst.
I vaguely remember the 90s, yes. Dijon, those subs as well. But yeah, look, and there is more to that. And then again, this is a person that had been talked about on Fox News. Like, this is a person who's gonna bring this entire thing down. And she had nothing. I don't know if you saw in that video, by the way, but at one point, as she's like ranting and raving, Rudy Giuliani like reaches over to like sort of pull her back.
Right.
Which means that Rudy Giuliani recognized that she was going too far. Like, even Rudy knew.
Or somebody said, like, what? Go ahead. No, he was like, you're stealing my shine. This is not the role you were hired to play. You stay in character. Yeah. Stay in character.
Yeah, I think, look, I don't necessarily blame Melissa Carone. I blame the media apparatus around her, the legal apparatus around her, people like Sidney Powell. Who said they were gonna release the Kraken. Instead, she opened and chugged from the bottle of Kraken, and it hurt her testimony.
100%.
But anyway, in addition to the drunk woman, there were other allegedly drunk women. There were other witnesses that had some issues with their testimony. You wouldn't expect that weird racism would show up in this particular context, but indeed it did. Here is one of the concerns raised by another witness.
The other representative said that you can actually show up and vote without an ID. It's shocking. How can you allow that to happen? Like, a lot of people think all Indians look alike. I think all Chinese look alike. So how would you tell?
what was that? John, what was it besides weird racism?
It's cover to some extent. So they got her to say it. I guess it's what some of the other people were thinking, but she's the one that actually says it. It's a bizarre argument. And by the way, also, like, let's say even hypothetically, you find it a little bit convincing that someone could pose as another person. Let's be clear. That doesn't have anything to do with this election specifically. You could say that True. That's a concern generally. But if you're trying to say that not only was there fraud, but there was so much fraud that hundreds of thousands of votes should be nullified after the fact, you're gonna need to bring something stronger than Chinese people look alike. And that's really a concern going forward. I don't think that does it.
No, it doesn't. And I love the point that you make. Is like, let's have this woman make the racist comment, right? At least, and it won't be as egregious as a non-POC making the racist comment. But I laughed in offense because that's like, you know, they always say that all Black people look the same, right? And or that when people want to be racist and say, oh, well, that Black guy, they all look the same. I just found it just. I don't even know what the word is that this woman would say that I think all Chinese people look the same. And she is also of Asian descent in some capacity. And to say that with her whole chest out, you know, it's just like, it's unthinkable. But hey, 2020, what do you expect?
Exactly. Well, specifically in 2020, for someone who is a part of this conservative thing, what I expect is what you're gonna get in this next clip, because I believe it's the same woman, actually. I might have the order out of the way. But again, it has to do with racism, but this time it's about actual racism from her point of view.
People that are being isolated are the Republican, white male Republicans. So that. Yeah, that's Please. Racism. If people ask me, was I ever treated unfairly, I would say rare.
So she has identified racism, but it's that they ganged up on white male Republicans, and That's the racism. And what I would say coming out of that video is that is a woman who knows what she needs to do to get brought onto Fox News. Because all Fox wants is people who aren't straight white male Republicans to say that society is too hard on straight white male Republicans. That's all it is.
She is, for another great point, John, she is fantastic television in that right. Because marginalized groups of people on a conservative network spilling that is just that will be Fox News going, yep, see, we told you, boom, there's the proof is in the pudding right there. And she is hyper marginalized. And she is a very clear example of a woman of color that sees what we've been talking about the whole time. We've been right all along. I can't believe it. I wonder how much they paid her. I wonder what her compensation was for that.
I mean, thus far, I haven't heard anything about that. I can't speculate.
Alleged compensation.
This is like, I don't know, this is like the county fair or the WWE come to town. It's like a big event. Like if you're in one of these states and you're crazy and you want 5 minutes of fame, just go to one of these things and testify. They're literally just collecting thousands of affidavits, just random people who said, I saw something, let me speak, you know, in front of a camera. That's effectively what this is. And so I want to show a bit more because we focus on a few, but there's so many different forms of crazy that at some point you just got to mash up a few. So here's a few more people who were involved in this effort to overturn the results of Michigan.
Line is I was not able to do my job because of harassment, and we had a parade of Black Lives Matter in rhinestones. I was told not to wear anything. In fact, I'm wearing what I wore today at TCF. So I did not see anything Trump, but I saw a lot of masks that said BLM, rhinestones. Don't forget the rhinestones.
And fellow senators, I appreciate the opportunity to address you today. I'd like to do so by swearing myself in. I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God. We have a problem. As I do my radio show every day.
You go in a very large room. It's really hot. I had a little thermometer with me to check my temperature through the course of the day. It was 85 degrees in there.
I don't have much to offer, and the reason why I say that, I wasn't able to get into the ballot room for very long before I was actually forcibly removed.
The truth is Biden and his co-conspirators, i.e. Michigan's executive branch, corrupt politicians, Governor Whitmer, Attorney General Nessel, and Secretary of State Benson definitely stole this election in 2020, and most likely in 2018 with Dominion ballot machines. I would also speculate the Democrats did the same in 2008 and 2012 for Obama's reign of destruction in America.
Okay, I just want to say about that last one. I want to hear a little bit less of what he has to say and a little bit more of what the woman who he's keeping in a dungeon below his house has to say. Right. They really just brought out all the craziest man, and they're going back to Obama. This is a wide conspiracy at this point.
John, don't forget the rhinestones. You can't forget the rhinestones.
No. The rhinestones. Could you?
A major threat on American democracy were those rhinestones. And she was the most infuriating of them all, because clearly again, this is just my interpretation of what she was saying. She has an issue with Black Lives Matter. That was maybe, yeah. I don't know, she couldn't get to Whataburger and get that double burger because there's people protesting in the street. But the sheer fact that she was like, and they were wearing Black Lives Matter masks with rhinestones is just hilarious. Hilarious. Or the destruction of America in 2008 and also in 2012. Clearly, they have issues with people of color, which is fine. Like, they can do their thing. But again, as to your point, they dug deep. They went to the depths of rural America to find these people, to just drag them out.
And the thing is, like, if your plan was to like demonstrate that there had been fraud and that the election results need to be changed. First of all, you try to do it in the court, and in their defense, they tried. They just failed horribly to do that in case after case after case after case. But you would only bring people who can actually prove something or at least demonstrate something incredibly suspicious. But they're not doing that, which leads me to believe that that's not actually their strategy. Their strategy is to just stretch it, just draw this thing out. Do you know, supposedly, since the election, Trump has raised $170 million. for the recount, even though the vast, vast majority of that is not going towards the recount. It's just money for him and his campaign at this point. Like, we look at that day of the guy talking about Obama and the guy who thinks the Constitution has a clause for it to be removed if it was above 85 degrees, or the woman who doesn't like shiny things. And we think that's embarrassing, but the right is eating it up, and they want more days of cases like this in Michigan and Arizona and Georgia and Pennsylvania and all of that. And all along, like while this is going on, Trump is raising tons of money. Giuliani is being paid tons of money. He had asked for $20,000 a day. I don't know that he got that, but he's certainly getting paid. And so why not continue with this farce if it's a well-paying farce?
Well, money aside though, I think I would be interested. Listen, we know this is not gonna go away anytime quickly, right, John? As you said, it's being stretched out. They're gonna find new and more hilarious, entertaining ways to keep this going well into 2020. But I would not mind if this is a reality that we're going to see politically, if, as you said, someone could come with a very, very impressive argument that has facts, that is rooted in deep research facts, and blow our minds. At least give us something to think about if this is gonna be what's on the menu for our entertainment going forward. Because it makes no sense now. It's a little infuriating as well, as because the election's over. When was a month ago, right?
One month ago.
Clearly, from all accounts, what's been reported across the country, in states, also in states that have had recounts, Biden has won with even more votes coming out in his favor than were counted the day of election. So now it's attacking the intelligence and the, I would say the mental faculties of the American people. I wish that someone on Trump's campaign or in Trump's camp would be like, listen, let's stop with the circus show and let's give the American people something to think about if we truly believe this is happening. Something compelling, that at least that. I think we're deserved that if this is gonna continue. But what we just saw with these randos is just, as you said, a waste of time and a waste of money. And January 20th is gonna come quickly. It's gonna come quickly, then what? When Biden and Harris are sworn in, what's next? Where do we go from there? We want to focus on healing. We want to focus on going forward, because COVID is, as we're going to talk about later in the show, is ravaging America still. We have work to be done, as Joe Biden said he wants to do. So let's get on with it. But if they're going to keep making these arguments, hit hard. Come with something heavy hitting versus just random BS. It's old and it's tired and it's offensive.
Yeah, I agree. And it is threatening. There's still the chance that something crazy could happen, but it is an opportunity to have a little bit of fun from time to time. And so we're gonna do that right now. Now, is the video I'm about to show you beneath the dignity of a political news show? Yes. But does it make Rudy Giuliani look ridiculous? Also yes, and so we're gonna play it. And so I thought about how I wanted to introduce this video, and I think I'm gonna go with the great Trump like authoritarian thing isn't going out with a roar, it's going out with a squeak. And in this video, you can actually hear the squeak.
The answer,
point of order.
The answer that I gave you is they didn't bother to interview a single witness. Just like you, they don't want to know the truth. Well, you probably know the truth. Oh, witness, just like you.
Witness, just like.
He farted. I mean, I'm not saying he farted. I wasn't in the room. But Jenna Ellis is definitely saying that he farted with that look.
Listen, hey, sometimes the silent but deadly isn't available. Sometimes it's just, it happens, right? However, I wonder how much Chipotle he had that day before the actual court. You know, people stress eat. He probably had some nachos, some guacamole, a couple of beers. It makes it a little gassy. But her face is like, wow. She looked at him like, really, dude? And in close quarters? Did you have a burger for lunch? What is that smell?
God, it's just so. Because we're not playing much of the video, but he was getting like really worked up because one of the Michigan state reps had said, shouldn't we bear in mind that you're looking for a pardon from Trump right now? And so he got all worked up, but like, I guess because he's old or whatever, like the getting worked up clamped the wrong muscles down, I guess. what you want is for your legal team to be cooking with gas, not to just have gas. And unfortunately, right, that's the direction they've gone in.
Well, John, listen, come on. How many you haven't gotten really, you know, intense and passionate on the main show and just like let one rip accidentally, right? You know, right? Like to camera one, just like, you know what? You can't handle the truth.
Someday I'm going to be denouncing some action of Biden and I'm going to hit the table and then hit the chair at the same time. Same. No, I don't think that's happened. If I have to, like, I'm drinking coffee and water all like during the show. If I have to burp, I feel bad on the show. But Giuliani, that is the seventh most embarrassing thing he's done in the last month.
From his hair coloring, just painting his face to this, it's the universe, John. Not to get all metaphysical and all, you know, altruistic, whatever, but the universe is like, you know what, you guys, your karma, look, let me deliver it. My karma is a bitch, and I am 100% that bitch. It's funny, though. It's funny. I wonder what he did have for lunch, because you know that Chipotle gets you together, man. That carne asada burrito will have you like lit.
Okay, well, we're gonna put our best reporters on it and we're gonna find the answers. Anyway, something stinks about this story and we're gonna get to the bottom of it.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Things have been bad when it comes to COVID for some time, but they are rapidly spooling up for what is going to be an absolutely devastating December following a devastating November. So I want to give you a little bit of information coming out of a source that isn't necessarily predisposed to be very sort of clear and honest about the threat that we're facing. But in this case, it is difficult to argue with the evidence. The White House Coronavirus Task Force says the COVID risk to all Americans is at a historic high. The national daily COVID incidence after Memorial Day, but before the summer surge, was fewer than 25,000 new cases a day. And it scared us at that point, remember. It's now more than 180,000 new cases a day. We actually passed 200,000 in the last report. COVID inpatients that then were fewer than 30,000, but they're now more than 90,000. We actually passed 100,000 since this report. Fatalities have more than doubled. We're in a very dangerous place due to the current extremely high COVID baseline and limited hospital capacity. And to buttress that, Dr. Birx says this is as a result of the insane, in every definition of the word, travel that happened over Thanksgiving. Says if you were under 40, you need to assume you became infected during the Thanksgiving period if you gathered beyond your immediate household. Most likely you will not have symptoms. However, you are dangerous to others and you must isolate away from anyone at increased risk for severe disease and get tested immediately. And there might be many people who came out of this last weekend thinking, hey, I don't feel sick yet. I guess we dodged a bullet. No, you could still very much be asymptomatic. You could be spreading it. You need to be incredibly careful for the next 2 weeks. Because there are so many people, potentially millions of people that are now walking around having been exposed by their family gatherings, maybe in the same state, maybe they've traveled back to other states, that are going to be infecting people over the next few weeks. And the numbers are already devastating and it's only going to get worse from here, Jason.
Right, I agree. Well, I'm in Florida right now, which as of today, as we've gone to air today, which is December 3rd, over a million cases just here in Florida. I'm in Miami-Dade County, which has had close to 2,500 new cases in 24 hours, right? And so, and that's up from 1,000 a couple of days ago. That's just here in Miami-Dade County. Also, Broward County, which is north of Miami, also has had 2,000 new cases. So it's just people aren't taking this seriously. And you know, the argument is now, because we've been in a pandemic, what, almost 10 months now? It'll be 10 months now. That we know what we need to do. We know how to stay safe. We know that we need to wear the mask. We don't need to social distance, etc. But with the holidays, people feel like we've suffered enough. And this is not an excuse. I'm just trying to wrap my head around people's thought process. That we've suffered enough in 2020. Let us have this time to just have some levity and be jovial. But not everyone is on the same page of, okay, we can be lax but still be vigilant in what we need to do to protect. Me and my hubby go to a beach on Saturday mornings where socially distanced, and there's still people. No one's wearing a mask. People are drinking. They have forgotten that this is still a problem. So they predicted this, John. They predicted this back in the spring. They said there was going to be a second wave, that this was going to be a dark winter. Winter was absolutely coming, and now it's here. And you know what? You guys are in Los Angeles, and Mayor Garcetti just announced new safe at home orders. I think last night, which
just last night.
For Los Angeles is a huge blow to the city that was trying to reemerge. And again, this doesn't just impact healthcare, as you mentioned about the hospital systems being overflooded and not being able to take care of the sick, but also people that are unemployed, people trying to go back to jobs, people trying to go back to work, people trying to have a livelihood or return to a livelihood or some form of that prior to COVID. It's a domino effect that affects so many different things. I don't see us emerging from this and I hate to be ominous and dark. But I think we're in this for another 2 years, even if there is a vaccine coming.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that could help the most, other than people complying with. Like, 2020 is the worst year, but it's also the year that we saw the purest crystallization of what America is. America is a country that can be affected by a crisis, and despite it having more resources than any other country has ever had, and all of the knowledge necessary to defeat the crisis, we choose not to.
Right, right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so Los Angeles is now shutting down. And so we had started to have, like, in the last week or two, like reduced hours, or maybe they shut down like outdoor dining. A lot of places around the country probably aren't experiencing this again. So they don't know, like, they may think, oh, a lockdown, sure, there's been lockdowns. No, supposedly this is, don't go outside in LA. Like, in a city of more than 10 million people, stay inside unless you absolutely have to, because so many people are getting sick. California yesterday reported over 20,000 COVID cases. That's according to the COVID Tracking Project. I think Johns Hopkins says we had 28,000 just in California in one day. And overall, we talk about COVID a lot on this show, and I know that people probably get sick of it. They certainly, based on my experience on YouTube, they don't watch these videos. So clearly they've stopped caring a long time ago. But I want to put it in perspective for people, because this has been a lot of months and it might start to blur together and you just think, well, yeah, things have been bad. But I want you to understand how much worse it's getting. So we initially had some lockdowns in a lot of parts of the country, and they lasted for, depending on how conservative your area was, 2 weeks or a month or 2 months. So once they'd effectively all been removed and almost the entire country had started to go back to normal in June, we lost 30,000 people in that first month after the restrictions were lifted. Last month, we lost 95,000 people. It is getting so much worse. In terms of how many people are getting it, in June, the positivity rate for COVID tests was at 5%. Since then, we're doing way more tests, okay? Which, according to Trump, means you're gonna find cases. But it also means if things aren't actually getting worse, that the positivity rate will decline, because you're doing so many more tests, you're gonna catch all these people that don't have it. 5% in June, it was 11.3% nationally in November. It is getting so much worse. And if anything, like, a significant portion of the country cares 5% as much as they did in June or in July.
Right, it's maybe that's because there is a malaise when it comes to COVID. As you said, people are tired of hearing about it, right? They're not watching videos. It's been this traumatic experience for everyone. However, it's the reality of what's happening, is that the reality is that it's happening still. And you, I lean on, my husband's always like, Jay, when you go out, wear your mask, make sure you take your mask. And you know, and I'm not around a lot of people all the time because I'm at home all the time. When I'm out, I'm, you know, in open spaces walking my dog. But it's just, we have to stay vigilant and we have to stay aware and not get lax on what's happening just because we're sick of hearing about it. It's become our reality to the point of where it's now background noise. COVID, quarantine, it's just become like, oh, okay, yeah, it's there, it's whatever. It's like paying your taxes, it's gonna happen. But that type of mentality is a reason why we've had, as you just said, those spike in numbers everywhere. And LA being the first to roll back and have these more strict and restrictive stay at home orders, that's gonna be this rolling action, I think, across the country. Florida, and the reason why Florida probably hasn't experienced it yet is because we're so down south. But we are constantly here in Florida in the news for the day over day rise in COVID cases. Just in Miami alone, a million cases in Florida. It's crazy. But people are hard headed. They don't care. They're over it. Yeah. That's what they say. The people are over it. And it's like, okay, well, when your family member is gone because you're over it, or you're in the hospital on a ventilator with something down your throat because you're over it, you know, let's talk then.
Yeah. And like I've said on the show, I lost a family member in Florida, by the way. It is serious and people do need to take it seriously. I think we will see a wave of closures, but I don't think it's gonna be all over the country. I think the Republican mayors and the Republican governors who didn't wanna do it back when, in theory, shutting down could have helped Trump win re-election. Mm-hmm. The idea that now with Biden, he's gonna be the president, I don't think they're gonna care at all. And we're about to go into like trying to figure out the true death toll. So we're gonna cover that very briefly, but really fast. Every day, so there's different horrors on a daily basis. So every day around 4:30, I check to see what the COVID tracking project's daily number is going to be. That is horrifying. It's even more horrifying when you feel in your gut that no matter how bad it is today, it's gonna be worse tomorrow and the next week. That is horrifying. But then there's sort of a meta horror of the fact that in the past, like maybe 4 months ago or 5 months ago, when the numbers would start to go up and we would talk about it, you sort of felt like, and this happened around the 4th of July and August and all that, that then people will hear about it and they'll start to take it seriously again. But I don't have that hope anymore. I like when we hit 3,000, which could happen today, could happen tomorrow, I don't know. That seems like something that would trigger people to take it seriously. Or when we hit 4,000 or 5,000 a day, when we have more than a 9/11 in a day, that people would take it more seriously. But I don't have any faith that that's gonna happen. I don't think 5,000 in a day is gonna freak out Fox News, is gonna get through to Brian Kemp or whatever. I just don't think so. And so there's this crazy, deep-seated helplessness that you're seeing something unthinkable rolling across the country every day, having no faith that a critical mass of people who are in positions of power, or at least can control their own actions, will take it seriously to help forestall the loss of life.
Well, and they don't, John, they don't take it seriously because I would imagine, like, okay, Trump, why do you think that he didn't want to, or why he wasn't more aggressive when it came to tackling COVID? They have personal agendas at the forefront versus the health and well-being of the American people. And furthermore, with the American people, that I think what happened was we were let out of our cage. We were put in cages for months, right? Per se, just hypothetically speaking, we were finally able to emerge from our caves. And now we know what it feels like, and we've been given this privilege. So it's like we don't want to go back to that. I think that had we kept the stay-at-home orders in a lot longer and just dealt with it, I think we would be a lot better off now. And to your question, it's like, why don't these people that have the power, they have the brains, they have the resources to enact change in regards to COVID, why aren't they doing it? It's because it affects their bottom line. It's affecting their personal agenda. Who knows? But it seems like it's more about their self-preservation than the preservation of the collective or American people as a whole. That's what I get from it.
Maybe. Okay, really fast, let's just run through a few of these numbers. So we hear frequently about the overall death toll in the US from COVID. And depending on who you look like, you could go and search right now, you might hear 250,000 deaths, 255,000 deaths. It really does matter. I go with the COVID tracking project generally, which showed yesterday that 2,733 people had died, although other trackers say over 3,000 just yesterday. And so your overall number can definitely change based on who you talk to. But at the end of the day, all of those are like the reporting of individual states, which is the reporting of individual hospitals for people that have been technically classified as having died with COVID. The thing is, as we've talked about every once in a while during the pandemic, that is not actually a count of how many people COVID has killed, because many people don't get classified with it. They don't end up in the hospital. They die perhaps alone at their homes. Now, one way that we can get to an actual number of the deaths is to figure out how many excess deaths there are. So we look over a number of years and say how many people generally die at this particular time. And if the number is significantly higher now, much higher than can be accounted for by the official COVID count, then barring some other better explanation, that might indicate that those people have actually died, although it will never be tracked as such, from COVID. And so much earlier on in the pandemic, we looked at some of these analyses and tried to figure out how many people died. Well, now we're much farther into it. And that means, unfortunately, that the excess deaths have continued to pile up. Overall, deaths nationwide were 19% higher than normal from March 15th to November 14th, the span that the analyses currently cover. Altogether, the analysis shows that 345,000 more people than normal have died in the US during that period, a number that may be an undercount since recent death statistics are still being updated. That doesn't include the massive rise over the past couple of weeks, by the way. But if this pattern holds through effectively yesterday, the total death toll would be about 380,000. Which means, no, look, some of those people might have died of other causes. And if people would like to come up with some explanation that makes sense considering the pandemic, sure, feel free. But a significant portion of those people did die due to COVID, which means that the overall number that we've been talking about that is horrifying for people who take this seriously is a massive undercount. Not by a few hundred, not by a few thousand, but potentially by 100,000 or more additional deaths, Jason.
Yeah, it's John, just by hearing that, never in my life, I mean, it's just so unfathomable to think that one, this is happening to us. Of course, you know, we grow up hearing about the flu and bubonic plague and all of these things that have ravaged humanity in the history, right? In history, but it's just like, when they talked about COVID back when we had one back in February, when we were talking about COVID on TYT on the main show, you thought it was going to be something that would be able to get under control quickly, right? That, you know, Americans, human beings, we're resilient. We find a way out of everything. Hell, we find a way to stop birth and like so things that like Mother Nature has created for us as human beings to engage in, right? And so now just hearing that number and looking 10 months later as to what has happened to us, how just our country alone, not considering the rest of the world, has been ravaged by COVID, it is hard to wrap your head around. It truly is. And it's more people are going to die. And I never thought in my 41 years on this planet, I would be saying that I have existed or I have survived, thankfully, through a pandemic, right? It sounds so Stephen King novel. It sounds so.
It's a movie,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, it sounds 28 days later. It's just, it's out of control. But I mean, this is our reality, as I said earlier. And it's sad that those numbers are an underrepresentation of the deaths that have happened. And there's sadly gonna be even more that are coming in the coming months. It's like, what do you do, man? Like, how do you, like, what do you say and what do you do, really, really?
Yeah, you try to get through to people and it's difficult because it's been, so like everybody says it's been politicized, which it has, but it's gone beyond it being politicized. It has been turned into the core political identity of millions of Americans to not care about this and to want to prove to the people around them who don't care about it that I care about it as little as you do. And I'm going to willingly endanger my life and the life of people around me. And that is freedom and eagles and the flag or whatever. And we're gonna actually have a little bit of that demonstrated later on. I did wanna mention one other thing though. So we're sort of looking back over the span of this pandemic. So one of the things that we talked about a lot earlier on was the potential for massive, like an epidemic effectively of evictions and people having their houses foreclosed on them because of the economic damage. And there has been quite a bit of that. Now, some of it was avoided by the fact that up until, depending on the state, various months, they had eviction moratoriums. So 44 states and Washington DC implemented eviction moratoriums after the pandemic hit, but 27 of them had been lifted by September and more are passing away between then and now and in the very near future. So the people who have lost their homes, who've been forced to either move or have been like out on the street, effectively not receiving aid because the federal government has effectively told the entire population to go F itself since the very early stage, has exposed those people to dangerous circumstances, including the pandemic. And just recently, actually, researchers of UCLA published a paper earlier this week asserting that evictions between the beginning of the pandemic and the CDC's national eviction moratorium in September led to almost 500,000 additional COVID cases and almost 11,000 additional deaths.
Right. It's
and the thing is that.
Go ahead.
Really fast. That paper came out earlier this week. I saw it on Curbed. I haven't seen other sources really talking about that, that potentially thousands of additional deaths just from the fact that we decided, yeah, we effectively like held off on your rent payments for a bit, but then you can get kicked out. And by the way, in the vast majority of these cases, all that was a smokescreen. It mm-hmm. was saying, we're not gonna let you kick out these people now, but you're just gonna postpone their rent. And right. many of them are out of work and they're not receiving aid. So they're definitely gonna get evicted once it's done because all of that will have piled up, but it looks good in the meantime. We're not gonna pay for it, that would be tough. We're gonna make it look like we care about people and thousands died.
I mean, 100%, it's this systematic, I don't wanna be really dark here, but it's a systematic slaughtering of people, if you will, right? By saying, okay, listen, you're gonna be on the street and sorry for you. We gave you a little bit of help. We did what we could, but that's about it. And also to couple with that, John, is a lot of the CARES Act and a lot of the things that were put into place this year to help people temporarily are also ending December 31st in a time yeah. where, as we just reported, numbers are spiking, numbers are rising. So what happens in 90 days from now when people are, when that money's gone and they're still unemployed and there is no moratorium on rent and there's tons of evictions, it's just going to add to that number and it's going to add to the dire situation that people are already in. I listen to a lot of different outlets talk about this here in Florida, and it's just like this domino effect, right? It's going, and that is only going to add to the number of cases that are going to be documented and unearthed in 2021 because the money is running out December 31st. Even for myself, I have benefited from the CARES Act, and it's over for me, and I'm still unemployed, right? So it's only going to get increasingly worse before it even can be considered to get better.
Yeah. Even the deal that they're talking about passing right now extends the unemployment benefit for a month,
which is nothing. And depending on what state you live in, luckily California, for people who live in California, that's one of the highest states that gets unemployment benefits. But people living in Florida and places like Montana, New Mexico, $97 a week. What is that?
Yeah. What is that? That's nothing. Yeah, I saw, by the way, as part of the Garcetti thing, and we're gonna move on to the news in a minute, that they're gonna give people who are out of work in the restaurant industry $800. And I guess I'm still naive. I went and I told my wife, oh my God, because we've been worried about this, because we've both worked in the restaurant industry before, mm-hmm. and it's huge in LA. And I was like, they're gonna give them $800 a week. And she was like, a week? And I was like, wait, actually, maybe I read it wrong. Maybe it was just $800 a month, which wouldn't be as good, but at least it's a good portion of your rent. No, I had read it really wrong. It was $800.
That's it.
Something, I guess, but
yeah, John. Very real. I know we got to move on really quickly. It's something, right? But even now, people. It's funny when people say that. Like, sure, I'll take your $800. What is that gonna do for me? What like that'll it'll give me gas. It'll buy me food. It's like you have to pick. It's Sophie's choice. You have to pick and choose what who lives or who dies, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't pay for your rent for even a month.
Right.
Helps in Los Angeles, I guess.
Yeah. Wow.
In Los Angeles, where the rent is absolutely, I live in a tiny, effectively one room apartment, and my rent is close to double that. So we've known since the relatively early months of the pandemic that at least two senators, David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler, appear to have used their insider government information to benefit themselves financially, potentially massively financially, through stock sales and purchases based on secret information that most people don't have. And they seem like they're gonna get away with it, but as the months have gone by, we've learned more and more about them. And I just wanna catch you up on some of the information that we have at this point. First, you need to know that these two senators are not like you and I. David Perdue is a longtime businessman who served as CEO of Dollar General in the mid-2000s. According to his financial disclosures, he is worth between $15 million and $43 million, which is
compared to me and potentially you, a rich person, compared to the other senator we're talking about, he is broke AF. So as Michelle Tendera writes at Forbes, Kelly Loeffler and her husband Jerry Sprecher own a big stake in International Exchange, a financial clearinghouse company that Sprecher founded and where he remains CEO and chairman. After closely examining Loeffler's financial disclosure forms and other information, Tendera estimates that the couple is worth at least $800 million and likely over $1 billion, or roughly quadruple the wealth of the second richest member of Congress, Senator Mitt Romney. So I need you to know that so that you know who Kelly Loeffler is, and to know that she is going through such difficult financial times that she has to do whatever it takes to benefit herself, even if it's corrupt or potentially illegal. I mean, she's only got $800 million.
Only $800 million? And yeah. By the way, she looks like a broke down Cher Horowitz from Clueless. Continue.
That is true. That's the best that can be done with $800 million, I guess. David Perdue probably looks like some other character. I forget who was in that. But anyway, was the guy who played Ant-Man? I don't remember. Anyway.
Yes, Paul Rudd. Yeah.
It was Paul Rudd. Okay, good. He looks like
Josh.
Like Paul Rudd in 700 years. Anyway. Okay, so on January 24th, there was a private all-Senate briefing about the disaster. This is before most people knew what was going to come. It was long before it brought up public understanding. Both Loeffler and Perdue started trading strategic stocks in the wake of that. Loeffler executed 29 transactions valued between $1.275 and $3.1 million in the following days before the market crashed, almost all of them sales. One exception was a purchase of Citrix, which sells teleworking software, which is the sort of thing that might benefit from the fact that there are going to be massive lockdowns. And you can get in on the ground floor with Citrix, since everyone else didn't know there were going to be massive lockdowns, but Kelly Loeffler had a good reason to believe that it was. Perdue made a similar number of trades, but bought more than Loeffler, in particular an investment of up to $850,000 in DuPont, which manufactures personal protective equipment. Again, the sort of trade you'd make when you knew what was going to come, but other people didn't. Right. Now, both of them say they didn't do anything wrong. Loeffler said her trades were made by an investment firm. Perdue said most of his investments were made by an independent advisor, although the Associated Press recently noted he still could have told that advisor what to buy and sell. And actually, even more recently in The Intercept, Ryan Grimm has provided evidence that he didn't use an independent advisor at all. He is simply lying about that. He ordered the trades individually based on the private information that he actually had. Now, as of right now, up until very recently, they've effectively been cleared. Our system is so fundamentally corrupt and so lackadaisical in the oversight of senators that you can apparently use the private information you have to benefit and you'll be okay. Now, there's some newer stuff which we'll get to, but so far, Jason, what do you think about this?
I think this is very Martha Stewart back in the day when she did the same thing. But yeah. Right, it's privilege, it's privilege. And John, well, and I know we're gonna go deeper into this story, but yes. The facts are the facts, right? I don't, people can believe whatever they want, but when they were privy to this information in January, as the article said, prior to broad awareness of what was going to happen with COVID, they made these trades. And then it's indicative of the corruption and also the privilege they have being as rich as they are, and the people that are in their circle that want to stay rich as well by helping these rich people. They should definitely be brought to justice. They should definitely be held accountable. And luckily the SEC is investigating this, of course, but I'm not surprised. I mean, again, Martha Stewart did the same thing, and she did time in a very posh and very nice, nice place to luxuriate while you're breaking the law. But I don't know, whatever. I mean, like, I would love to have an ounce of what they have financially, and if I did, I would definitely not. I would definitely make sure I was not being illegal with it. Again, I leave and land on privilege.
Yeah, she went to the sort of prison that, like, if I could go to it right now for a few weeks, I would. Like, I would love to be able to go to that prison for a little bit.
100%.
Yeah, and Kelly Loeffler, like, I don't know if she's worth 800 million or a billion. And you know what the difference between 800 million and a billion is? Nothing. It doesn't matter. You have unlimited money. You can buy and do whatever you want. It doesn't matter. I wouldn't be a senator at that point. Just do everything.
What is that?
What?
Yeah, like I don't understand that. Why, like, you? It's in all these HBO shows. It's about when you have politics. It's always some really rich person that. Why? I get it. They want power, but money can buy power. Why go and run for? Why don't you just go and live your life and leave people alone? If I had $1 million, John. Mm-hmm. I would be like, I'm good. Thank you. It's been a great life. Existential left. I'll see you guys later. You know, like I don't understand why these super rich people always want to be in office. Like, what's the allure? I get a stupid question. What's the allure? We know the allure is power, but people want those jobs to also make money. And you have, as you said, unlimited buckets of money. Just go and be happy, be merry, and do your thing. Leave people alone. Stay in your lane.
Yeah, it's an addiction. They're addicted to money, and it's the, like, there are a lot of addictions with different levels of stigma. It is the one addiction that we have decided should not be stigmatized. Indeed, we should found our entire economic system, our social structure, a lot of our pop culture, all around. It's good to be addicted to this thing that can't actually improve your life in any way because you already have an effectively infinite amount of it. In any event, for Purdue, what he seems to have run afoul of in the most recent investigations is that because the Justice Department and others started looking at his stock sales as a result of all of the obviously corrupt sales that he did that had to do with the pandemic, other stuff started to get caught in that. So the Justice Department closed its look into Purdue's coronavirus related stock trades as it did Loeffler's. But with Purdue, they found something else. His sale of more than $1 million in stock in January from an Atlanta financial company for which he previously sat on the board weeks before that CEO stepped down and the stock price plummeted. I want to show you a short video clip that really quickly summarizes sort of how this appears to have gone down.
Latest attacks from Ossoff target the timing of Senator Purdue's sales of more than $1 million worth of stock from Atlanta-based Cardlytics, a financial company where Purdue was once a board member. In emails obtained by the New York Times, Cardlytics CEO at the time, Scott Grimes, emailed the senator on January 21st. David, I know you are about to do a call with David Evans. As an FYI, I have not told him about the upcoming changes. Senator Purdue responded, I don't know about a call with David or the changes you mentioned. The Cardlytics CEO emailed back the next morning. David, sorry, that email was not meant for you. Wrong, David. An email mix-up. But the next day, on January 23rd, financial disclosure forms show Purdue sold between 1 to 5 million in Cardlytics stock. 6 weeks later, Cardlytics stock plummeted when the CEO announced he was stepping down, forecasting disappointing earnings. On March 18th, with Cardlytics stock at $29 a share, financial disclosures show Purdue bought back between $100,000 to $250,000 worth of Cardlytics stock. Cardlytics is trading this week at around $120 a share.
So that weird back and forth with the email where he accidentally gave incredibly important private information to David Purdue, Purdue, who, again, much wealthier than us, absolutely broke compared to Kelly Loeffler. He's trading $100,000. Like Loeffler's like, I don't even know. I lost $100,000 out of my pocket. The wind took it. He doesn't care. He was able to make a ton of money there. And thankfully, John Ossoff is making a big deal out of that. There's other stuff. Like in 2019, he became the chair of a subcommittee that oversees the Navy. Right before that, he bought stock at a contractor that works with the Navy that ultimately benefited from legislation on which Purdue worked, which I'm sure comes as a major surprise to Purdue, who didn't know about that at all and definitely didn't buy the stock specifically so that he could write legislation that benefited him. They should not be allowed to own or trade individual stock. And I believe that that should be literally the bare minimum. I'm personally fine with some sort of maximum income, some sort of maximum wealth for our elected officials. I understand we'll never win over tons of Americans with that. I personally believe that if you want to spend your life serving the people as an elected representative, then you should serve the people. You should not, nor should you be able to serve your own individual financial interests. But the situation right now is so lax that this corruption comes in effectively every form that I can imagine. And apparently a lot of it is totally okay. And he can totally do. And the best we can hope for is that in his runoff at election, if John Ossoff focuses on enough, maybe he'll lose a point. Like as a result of the most obvious corruption you can imagine. It's just people just don't seem to care that much about it anymore.
They don't. And one, shout out to that woman's voice narrating that clip on CNN. I love her, just the way she go. I love a good like, but from that video, John, we can see that this is obviously him having an inside track of what's going on and not being held accountable. And he probably won't be brought to justice, and he probably will not be held accountable. And he will probably still be able to ascend to whatever heights he's trying to ascend to, and also amass the type of wealth that he's wanting to amass, or amass even more wealth. I wish it's, you know, to be that rich. One, what is that like? I wonder what that tastes and feels like. One, you know, and two, just the, again, back to the privilege that these people have, that they don't live, they don't operate or live in a world that is everyday people, obviously, because of the wealth they have. But just to have just a taste of the financial wealth that they are privy to would be, it's life changing for so many people, but yet they abuse it and they're greedy and they want more and more and more. As you said, it's an addiction. Didn't he blame, say, when he was asked about the trading, he said that he didn't, you know, he leaves it to his financial advisors, and I don't know what's going on, and my financial advisors take care of everything. I find that hard to believe, because even when I go to Wells Fargo and cash like a $200 check, you best believe I make sure they're putting it in the right account, and I get a receipt for what's happening with that $200. So for someone or anyone that has that type of wealth, that has a team of financial advisors that are handling your portfolio that's massive, you are absolutely gonna make sure you know what's being traded, what's being invested, what are the returns. You're gonna know every nook and cranny of those transactions, because again, you are addicted, you're greedy, and you are a control freak when it comes to your money. So I'm not buying that he wasn't aware of these types of transactions, or he wasn't privy to, or he wasn't, you know, he leaves in the hands of other people to handle his investments. I can't buy that either.
And look, it's the arrogance and the cockiness to not just do this, to not just sell, obviously selling because you know that stocks are about to go down, but then the ones that they bought to buy the teleworking and the PPE, it's so see-through. They're throwing it in our face, knowing that they're probably going to get away with it, and they're probably right in that. No, they should, the election should be publicly funded. They should be living in public housing in DC and in their district. They should be on the federal minimum wage. They should be barred from owning or trading individual stocks. And if you don't like that, you don't have to serve as an elected representative. It is purely optional. You don't have to do it. You can go off, be some rich jagoff if that's what you want to do, but you shouldn't be in charge of what happens in the American government if your inability to benefit yourself financially is that frustrating to you.
Right.
Great. Anyway, let's we're gonna do very, very quickly. It's a little bit more in COVID. I apologize, but it's just so egregious. We're gonna very quickly jump into this thing. Let's do this. In New York, they are starting to once again clamp down just a little bit in some ways, thanks to the fact that COVID cases are rising up again. And they have, in some cases, for instance, with restaurants and bars, they've provided some new restrictions on how they're supposed to function. Now, most restaurants and bars are willing to comply with that. Others are not, and have decided to make a big thing out of it because they know they're gonna get positive coverage from Fox News, and right wingers are gonna love that. And so apparently in Staten Island, we have a bar like that, who had hundreds of mostly maskless protesters sort of gathered outside of it because they are saying they're not going to abide by the guidelines. I want to show you a little bit of video of the gathering.
Wow, that's like a lot. That's okay. What kind of Macy's Day Parade is that?
That's a lot of people. Now, I have seen zoomed in footage. There are some people wearing masks, but the vast majority are not. Hypothetically, if they were, it wouldn't be as disastrous. Although again, COVID is really spiking and New York is not gonna be immune to that. But again, this is not just about like wanting to be at the bar. This is about their political identity, which is founded on not caring about COVID. It's gonna be pretty clear in this next video where they get a little bit of a chant going.
USA, USA.
I mean, they got the flags. This is America. It's this bar saying they're not gonna abide by the rules that other bars have to, and a bunch of Republicans saying that that's what patriotism is effectively.
Well, then You know what, then I don't wish COVID on any of them, but hey, you made your bed, you gotta lay in it.
Yeah, I don't, but there's a good chance they're gonna get it. I mean,
right.
And it's the most obvious thing. Like a friend of the show, Jordan Yule, tweeted, "Never underestimate how stupid Americans can be," because you see that crowd and you know what's out there right now. Wajaha Ali tweeted, "COVID going to eat." Like this, you are effectively doing what the virus wants. Like,
right.
I'm not saying don't gather. I'm saying gather for the right thing and wear masks if you're going
right.
to.
Like gather, like, right, yes.
I guarantee every one of those people thought that the, you know, anti-police brutality protests were a stupid waste of time, but they're out there protesting like because this place that serves beer is having a temper tantrum. Like we get to judge each other for what we choose to organize around, and I'm going to judge you because this is stupid.
Point blank period. I agree, John.
Yeah, and by the way, so they have declared effectively an autonomous zone for this bar that they're not going to abide by any of the state laws, and they think that they've come up with like tricky bizzicky ways to get around it. That they lost their liquor license because they're not going to abide by the results. So they said, well, then we're going to serve drinks and people can just give us donations, but that's also illegal. You can't actually do that. So not as clever as they thought, but they were clever enough to know that this will get them positive media coverage. So Fox News, who remember just a couple of months ago lost their minds when there was the Seattle autonomous zone, suddenly changing their tune about the whole thing.
Good morning, Trace. And as you might be able to see here behind me, Max Public House is plastered with signs declaring itself an autonomous zone, informing the public of that so that they could hopefully stay open, serve their customers, and get around those coronavirus restrictions. But after the bar was closed down on Tuesday, the locals not too happy about it. Check out what happened here last night. Man, it was a scene. Hundreds swarmed this Staten Island street to show their support for the owners of Max Pub after New York City sheriff's deputies made an unannounced, quote, last call for all and shut it all down. They also placed one of the co-owners, Danny Pressey, under arrest for defying COVID restrictions, including serving food and booze for free in exchange for donations after the pub's liquor license was suspended and also staying open after the state imposed 10 p.m. curfew. Pressey told Fox News the idea was to get their livelihoods back, and they also say that they were operating and doing it in a safe way.
I mean, in theory, there is a safe way. That's what the guidelines are, but right. You don't care about that. Your whole thing is not caring about that. No matter what the restrictions were going to be, you want to turn against it because you know that's going to get you on Fox and Friends. It's going to get you more business in the future. It's so see-through at this point.
And you know, just what's also frustrating, John, is that okay, the business, but the people protesting, probably some of those people that are protesting are receiving pandemic aid as well for COVID, right? So it's kind of like you're going against this. You don't agree with the guidelines, but you want to get money from the American government in regards to COVID, but yet you don't stand by doing what needs to be done to end COVID. That's what bothers me. Like that's what irritates me the most is when people. You know, like, and we went to Key Largo, and you know, Florida is very conservative. Before the election, it was Trump everywhere, and like again, people weren't wearing masks mm-hmm. there, and they were anti masks as well. But yet, those are the same people that were just like, well, where's my stimulus check? Where's my this? Where's my that? Because of COVID. Well, do your part as well. You know, like don't if you want to don't ask for a handout. And not want to be a part of the solution. You know, does that make sense? You know, it's yeah. I don't know. It always rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, and look, the reason I wanted to play the Fox News video is because, you know, despite the fact that their ratings are apparently hurting because of Newsmax and OAN, millions of Americans still watch them, and how people think about and act around the pandemic is still going to be driven by Fox going forward, even once Biden is sworn in. And so I and a lot of people have been trying to figure out what are they going to say about the pandemic once it's no longer Trump in office. And a lot of people seem to believe that they are going to turn and be really critical about it. They're going to take it really seriously. And I get why people believe that, because now being critical of it theoretically hurts the Democrats, it hurts Biden. But the thing is, like, they can't say that we need to do something. Like, they may critique, like, point out that a lot of people have died, but they can't then say, and that's why we need stimulus checks to keep people home. We need lockdowns, we need restrictions on restaurants, you need to wear your mask. Their audience would revolt over that more than anything else. So
maybe they can find some way to walk the razor's edge where they can try to stick it to Biden, but imply that nothing should be done and Mitch McConnell should stop anything from being done. Because otherwise, like that crowd of people, they're 10 months into the pandemic and they think the most important thing in the world is sticking it to the government when the government tries to take the pandemic seriously.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And best case scenario, those people watch Fox News. For all we know, they watch crazier stuff. Like Laura Ingraham is the upper floor of the possibilities for their media diet.
Well, she is their. I don't want to say, she's their white Oprah, but I mean, she is. I mean, let's give her a real.
You get COVID.
We all get COVID.
God. Anyway, sorry to end on a downer, Jason. You bring much light and life to the show. I don't want to bring you down, but thank you for joining us as always.
Hey, always a pleasure, guys. And John, it's good to see you, man. Hope everything stays cool with you guys. Hi, everyone, TRT Army. John, you keep being Dragon Daddy.
I'm going to try. And by the way, like we said in the beginning of the show, Jason's recent interview with Maya is available. I can't wait to watch it. I don't know if you can spoil who's coming up soon, but where can people watch your show?
They can watch the show on my Instagram at Jason Carter Official or on my YouTube channel at Jason J. Carter. That Maya was my season 3 finale. Stick around because in January 2021, Jason Unleashed is back for season 4. And I can't dish on the guests yet, but just know they're going to be great and you're going to love it. And John, you're coming on the show. John Iderol is going to be on season 4. So there you have it.
Yes, yes. But so there will be me and there will be awesome guests. Jason, thank you for joining.
See you soon, John.
Have a good one. In the lead up to the election, throughout the campaign, the Biden campaign, his surrogates, they talked a lot about how important the black vote was to them, how they needed turnout to be there and what they felt they were doing to earn that vote. Well, now Joe Biden has won. In less than 2 months, he's going to be president. So what comes now? What will they actually do now that they're going to be in charge? And joining us now to break down some of these possibilities is civil rights attorney Charles Coleman Jr. Welcome to the Damage Report.
How you doing, John? Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Very glad to have you on. So before we jump into some of the specifics, what did you think about the fact that Biden did win? I know that we're still in the aftermath of it and the legal efforts are still ongoing, but what did you think about the fact that Trump had been so rejected?
Well, I think that a lot of it, quite frankly, John, had more to do with coronavirus than anything else. If I'm being completely honest, I think that quite frankly, the Biden campaign had a little bit of luck on their side in that they had a terrible opponent in Donald Trump, who was quite frankly able to energize the opposition's base more than he was to galvanize his own base. And I think that, you know, beyond what we saw from the economy and business before coronavirus, the mishandling of that situation was so egregious, it was so bad that I think that, you know, Americans who were sort of moderate or considered themselves apolitical were just motivated to go out to the polls and vote, because we find ourselves in such a terrible predicament now because of that void in leadership. So I think that Joe Biden had a lot of good things working for him in his favor that necessarily weren't about Joe Biden. I think there were a lot of people who voted against Donald Trump and did not vote for Joe Biden, but nevertheless, he is the victor now and he has the stage, so to speak, and it's his to do with it as he pleases.
Interesting. So specifically for black voters, we still don't know exactly how all of the numbers are going to work out, but it seems like black voter turnout was fairly high, although it looks like Donald Trump might have done a little bit better in that community than he did back the last time. What did you think about the way Biden campaigned, the promises he made, things that he focused on in terms of what his agenda was like? How did he make the case?
You know, a lot of it remains to be seen. I mean, I think that he said what he needed to say in terms of not getting it wrong. I don't necessarily know that means he got it right. I think that he basically needed to distinguish himself from Donald Trump from the standpoint of Trump's rhetoric having been very harmful to black people in America and arguably having put black people in America in harm's way. And so because of that, what he needed to do just from a rhetoric standpoint was make himself different. And he did a good job of that. He did a good job of basically saying, I am rejecting this hate speech. I am rejecting this rhetoric that threatens to marginalize you all as a community even further than you've already been marginalized. Now, policy-wise is where I think I, as well as many others, have some serious Because when it comes to policy, yes, Biden did release his Lift Every Voice plan, and it was extensive in terms of what he plans to do for the black community. But if you read between the lines, if you look at it with a fine tooth comb, you can kind of see that there are some issues with that plan. And I think that that's where many of us are now. We're sort of waiting to see exactly whether the proof is in the pudding when you look at policy, when you look at what he's actually going to do for foundational black Americans here in America.
And look, we still don't know exactly what the rest of government is going to look like once he becomes president. There, depending on how those primary or those runoff elections in Georgia go, Mitch McConnell could still be in charge in the Senate, right, which wouldn't mean that Biden couldn't do anything, but it would make it a little bit easier. If he wasn't really prioritizing these things, a hostile Senate would make it a little bit easier to say, what can I do? Like, they're not going to pass any big legislation. If we do have Mitch McConnell, how much does that change your expectations or your hopes for what Biden might be able to or willing to accomplish?
Well, here's the thing about that, John. Joe Biden has to figure that out. And I'll tell you why. He has about 18 months. He and Kamala Harris have about 18 months, give or take, before we get to the point of midterms. And then when we start getting to the point of midterms, we're naturally going to be looking at what's going to happen in 2024. So he has a very short window to figure that out. And I would hope that he and his policy team have already begun to think about alternative routes to get things done, be it by way of executive order, be it by way of working with Congress and the leadership there with regard to Speaker Pelosi and other things, so that we don't end up relying on Mitch McConnell. But I do want to point something out. I thought it was very telling early on in the primary season. I recall Joe Biden actually said that he was the candidate who was best positioned to flip the Senate and turn it blue. And I thought that was a really strong selling point. I thought that actually it was an understated selling point that he should have used more often than he actually did. Now, of course, this was pre-corona. This was pre sort of like the hybrid campaign season that we ended up seeing. So it's very likely that he didn't get an opportunity to sort of drive that point home the way that he thought that it would resonate with Democratic voters. Nevertheless, now that we're here, he's got to figure that out. I don't necessarily know that Mitch McConnell being the Senate majority leader ends up getting him a total pass not to do anything. I mean, you know, Mitch McConnell has been in office. He had a tough race as an incumbent. It was still likely that he was going to win that race. He did. And it's very possible that that seat that Raphael Warnock in Georgia doesn't win his race. It's possible that there's voter backlash from GOP voters in the state of Georgia. We just really don't know what's going to happen. So my point being, it's up to Joe Biden to sort of have a plan and have a strategy. And it's not going to be enough for black voters for him to be able to say, I didn't have a Senate majority. There was nothing I could do. We're not going to go for that.
We don't know exactly what his cabinet is going to look like, because even that potentially has to run up against Mitch McConnell. But he's been making some of his picks for people he wants to have in his team. And everybody's watching it to see what signals is he sending with the people that he's choosing to elevate. What have you thought of the picks that you've seen so far?
I think everything that I've seen, particularly looking at his financial team and the team around the economy, has been something that really wants to mirror what the face of the Democratic Party is supposed to look like. I mean, it's been hallmarked by the theme of inclusion. We've seen tons of women. We've seen tons of ethnic minorities who've been a part of both policy as well as planning in terms of the transition, as well as, like I said, his economic team is probably the most indicative of that. You have folks who are coming from private industry, having been stars there. You have folks who have decorated careers in public service and government. So you see that as well. And so I think what you are going to see, or what you should expect to see, is an administration that reflects the diversity of thought and ideas that exist that the Democratic Party sort of hangs its hat on. What that means in actual reality remains to be seen. I mean, I think that the optics and the symbolism are pointing toward the right direction, but we have to judge Joe Biden, and as we would any president, by his results. I don't think that we're at a point anymore where we can sort of look at the face cards, if you will, of who's being put in certain positions and just have that be enough. Representation matters, but at the end of the day, results are going to be paramount.
Yeah. And finally, I've had activists and organizers that focus on a few different areas, like the environment, immigration, that obviously they have big expectations for what could potentially be done with legislation. But they also know that there's quite a few things that can be done almost instantly solely by Joe Biden via executive orders. They could be done on day one. Are there any things like that that you're hopeful for, that you're looking out for?
So, you know, for me, I'm a civil rights attorney and a diversity and inclusion practitioner. You know, I work with businesses, I work with government agencies around diversity and inclusion. It was a crushing blow to have Donald Trump sign an executive order which basically froze all federal funds that would cover diversity and inclusion trainings and programs for federal agencies. So that for me is a big one that off the top I would like to see, sort of by way of executive order, him reversing that, freeing up those funds, and continuing a much needed conversation in a variety of sectors around diversity, inclusion, and race equity. I think there's also something that he can do. I've talked about this publicly before. I talked about it on the Young Turks before, that being the notion of qualified immunity. He can't necessarily do anything to abolish the doctrine of qualified immunity by way of executive order or where he sits. However, what I do think that he has is the power of his bully pulpit at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And I think it's really important that he use it. If you're going to talk about criminal justice reform, if you're going to talk about dismantling systemic inequity, you have to sort of be willing to speak on these topics. And I know that early in the campaign season, many people, including myself, were disappointed to find that he wasn't willing to talk about getting rid of qualified immunity. And I feel like that's one of the things that he needs to step out in front of and change if he's going to change people's minds about his record on criminal justice in America.
Exactly. And coming off of this year, there's no excuse not to have something like that be a part of your focus. And if you don't, it seems almost like you're gambling that all of that social movement and energy and passion will actually just go away if Trump goes away. And that seems like a risky gamble if you want the midterms to go the Democrats' way.
And John, you're absolutely right. I know we're short on time, but you're absolutely right. You know, it's not just a gamble for Joe Biden. It's a selfish gamble in that the people who are going to pay the price for that are Democratic, you know, candidates. Yeah, the party is going to be the one who ends up paying the price for that sort of gamble, because at the end of the day, whether Joe Biden does two terms, whether he does one term, the record, the legacy of what he establishes that keeps going during these first 2 years in office leading up to midterms are really going to set the tone for the 2024 presidential election. So he has to think a lot bigger than his own legacy. He has to think about what kind of position is a gamble like that going to put my party in, because it really would subject him to a lot of angry voters.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Charles Coleman Jr., thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.